Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hi everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, many of you would have heard the news, and the news is that we have released the Savvy Dentist magazine, which is the sister publication to this podcast. And the magazine is something that's it's been rattling around my brain for a lot of years now, probably since we released the podcast, actually. And what I wanted to do was to bring practice owners in-depth articles, in-depth analysis that are designed to help them achieve the things they want to achieve from their business. And the whole idea of the magazine is to continue the theme of Not Invented Here, where we look at other industries, we dissect what's working in other industries, and we think about those lessons and make them relevant to dentists so that they can be adopted into the practice by the practice owner so they can achieve their own success. But on top of that, we're talking and interviewing and hearing from lots of people whose role in life is to help practice owners support them in their business journey. So we're talking about things like accountants and wealth creation experts. We're talking about lawyers. We're talking about recruitment and HR people. We're talking about information technology experts. We're talking about fit-out experts and making sure you design your practice well for efficiency. We're talking about property strategy experts, marketing experts, a whole lot more. And the magazine has been designed to be a go-to resource. It's been designed to be able to provide in-depth analysis. As I said, no short, sweet articles. We wanted to go deep. We wanted to be substantive in what we're talking about. And we wanted to provide that analysis and expertise so that you can make decisions that, you know, hopefully impact your practice in a really positive way. So the magazine is totally free. There's nothing to pay. The magazine is going to come in two formats as of edition two. So it's going to come in the print version as well as the digital version. And if you want to get a copy of either of those, and as I said, either of those are free, all you need to do is head across to SavvyDentist.com, find the magazine tab, and subscribe there. And we really want to give that to you as a resource that we hope will accelerate your progress, take you to your goals, and allow you to achieve all the things that are important to you. So all you need to do is head across to the website, SavvyDentist.com, look for the magazine tab, subscribe away, and we'll get that magazine to you. We can't wait to share it with you. Now, today I want to talk to you about a really important topic, and that is time. The most precious resource we have is time. And when it comes to running a business, one of the most common things that I hear from dentists when they come and join us is they typically say, first of all, I want to make more money. And you go, great, and we have a process for that. And then once they're making money, then they go, well, the money's fine, but now I want to have more time in my life and I want to have more enjoyment or have more meaning and satisfaction. And so we need to get that balance right. We need to figure out what we're optimizing the practice for. And I think that's really important because, you know, in business, there's a hierarchy of needs. You know, we all know about Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, but there's a hierarchy of business needs as well. And from a business point of view, we absolutely need to nail cash flow first because cash flow is what keeps the business alive. But as I said a moment ago, once we've got enough money, typically people then want to have more time for themselves to, you know, do the things they want to do, more time for others, and get that balance in their life. And what's really interesting to understand is successful people don't fail because they're failing per se. They fail typically because they create a business that they don't like. And that's what happened to me. So in my first dental practice, I had set aside all my previous business instincts. I'd had businesses prior to owning dental practice that had been successful and I'd had leverage. I'd learned about sales. I'd learned about marketing. I'd learned about running teams and leverage, all those sorts of things. But then when I started a dental practice, I don't know why, but for some reason I convinced myself or was convinced to set aside all that business expertise, all that experience, and follow a traditional practice management path. And while we did okay financially, I was desperately unhappy because the business was like a prison. It was like golden handcuffs. If I wasn't there, I wasn't earning. If I wasn't earning, the business was going backwards. And it meant that I'd spend my day doing dentistry and my evenings and weekends catching up on the business activities. And what that meant is I'd get home late and my kids would be tired, you know, that witching hour, and that they wouldn't be at their best. I wouldn't be at my best. And I felt I was missing out on them. And I felt I was also missing out on things that were important to me, you know, taking good care of my health and going to the gym and doing all those sorts of things. All took a back seat because the business became all-consuming. So as I said, successful people don't fail per se. They fail because they create something they don't love. And what ended up happening for me was I just didn't have the energy to go back and revisit those previous business lessons. And what ended up happening is I sold that business, and after a little bit of break and I kind of recovered and got myself back on track, I started other businesses outside of dentistry, and I thought, well, you know what? I could have actually changed that business. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're feeling burned out and stressed out like I was, then I want to encourage you to not make the same mistake I made. The big mistake I made was selling the business. That's probably the biggest financial mistake I've made. I'd encourage you to think about re-engineering your business and creating a business that you love, because I really believe that that's what you've got to do. And creating a business that you love means you're optimizing it for the money you want to make, but also you're optimizing it for the time you want to have for yourself, for your family, and so on and so forth. So we've got to get clear about that. And so today I want to talk specifically about time and how to get better control of it. And there's three concepts I want to talk about today, three big ideas. The first big idea is about how to delegate. We all understand the value of delegating things, and we want to talk about how to do it. And specifically what I want to talk about today are three filters through which you can look through delegation. I want to talk about the importance of mentoring and training. And thirdly, I want to talk about who to hire and when. Sometimes we would call this the replacement sequence. So we want to buy back your time with other people doing things that you don't want to do anymore. So I want to talk about who to hire and when. All right, so let's begin with delegation and these three filters. And I guess what I wanted to begin with is listing out these three filters, because I think this is important that as we look at all the activities on our plate, one of the first things that we can do to free up our time is to clear that plate. And we've got to examine what we do on a day-to-day basis, list out all the activities that we do, and then really use these three filters to figure out whether we're going to delegate them or not. And the first filter is around money. And so we can look at the tasks that we're doing and filter them based on how much it would cost us to hire someone else to perform that task and see if it's worth our while to continue doing. So what that means is, you know, we use a measurement called the effective hourly rate. And effective hourly rate is basically profit divided by the number of hours you work as the business owner. And so it's not what you bill when you're doing your clinical work. It's not your $1,000 an hour, whatever you're billing clinically. It's your profit divided by the total number of hours you work in or on the business. And if a task can be delegated or handed off to someone for a lower hourly rate, then that might be something you want to consider, because your hourly rate is high, your profit per hour is higher. And so I'd really encourage you to start thinking about that in that lens. So the second lens that you can look at as you examine the tasks that you want to delegate is around energy. And we've got to understand that some tasks that you're doing now play to your natural strengths and abilities and interests, and others do not. And so some of these tasks that don't play to your interests and strengths and abilities drain you of energy. And I think energy is a currency that we don't really measure enough of. And I'd encourage you, if you're doing things you don't love or don't light you up, then hand them off. And I don't know what that'll be for you, but you know, just hand them off. And what you'll find is there's going to be someone who actually loves to do the tasks that you don't love to do. It sounds surprising. You think, oh my God, I hate doing this thing. Who would ever want to do this? But you'd be surprised. There's someone who says, that's fantastic. I could do that all day, every day. And they probably hate doing the tasks that you love to do. So hand off the things that, you know, drain your energy. And the third lens through which to look at delegation, how we're going to prioritize what you do and don't do, is to think about the tasks that actually move the needle forward, the things that add value to the business. And so what you'll find is there's going to be a few tasks, the vital few, that actually move the needle forward in your business, you know, the 80-20 rule. So we want you to focus on the 20% of activities that drive 80% of the outcome. And we don't want to get you caught up in the trivial tasks, the things that kind of annoys but don't really move the needle. And so when you look at the tasks on your list of things that you currently do, you're going to want to identify the things that actually make a difference rather than things that are obligations. So just spend your time on those things that are high-value tasks rather than low-value tasks. So when it comes to delegating, we want to be able to hand things off. Now, just when it comes to that, that means not drive by delegation. It doesn't mean just kind of handballing, it means handing off. And handing off means that the person receiving the task is adequately trained, they've got resources, and there's a follow-up and a check-in process to make sure they're going okay. As you go through this process of delegation, it's really important to understand that million-dollar companies are not built on $10 tasks. And so if you're spending time and energy and effort on tasks that are not worth your while, it's time to get clear about what those tasks are and have a process for handing them off to someone else who can do that for you. Alrighty, so that's delegation. Let's talk about mentoring and training. Now, one of the things that I'm fond of saying is that if you look at any sports team on the planet or sports person on the planet, they will train a lot more than they compete. They spend hours upon hours upon hours of training and relatively short amount of time by comparison competing. And so it doesn't matter what sport or what discipline it is, that seems to hold true. But in business, it's almost the other way around. We're kind of on the competition field way more than we're training. And so training, in my mind, is something that is underdone in nearly every dental practice. And so we need to be able to train our team really well. And I'm on the record for saying, yes, it's useful to have external trainers or go to external courses. That's great. And I think that is really important to, you know, level up your knowledge. But it's not a replacement for having good training internally. And how well you can recruit new people, onboard them and train them and have them become productive quickly is going to be a major competitive advantage, a strategic advantage in your practice. So we've got to be able to train really well. And what that means is we've got to have a process for transferring knowledge. And you can do that in different ways. You can, you know, have videos, you can have documentation, you can have audios, whatever it happens to be. But you want to have a process where, you know, when you're bringing someone into the practice for whatever role that may be, whether it's a dental assistant, maybe a front desk or anything else, right? You want to know what are the basic skills that you need them to have and how you're going to assess competency around that. You're going to have your resources, as I said, video, audio or written, and you're going to want to be able to, you know, give people the resources that they need to learn what they need to learn, but you can't assume that they just passively learn. You've got to actively test for competency and sign off on that. And the way you'll know that someone's competent is when they can actually do the task to a very high level. In fact, the same level as the person who is the exemplar in the practice, because you don't want to have a slow deterioration of knowledge or a slow deterioration of tasks so that, you know, there's this kind of downward spiral. We want to make sure we're going in a virtuous loop upwards and we're getting better and better as we do things. So we want to be able to train people well. And what that really means is understanding that training is everyone's business. And the mindset I'd encourage you to think about here is to become a training institution. And I really believe, as I said a moment ago, that if you can become really, really, really good at training and you're able to take someone who is metaphorically a rookie and have them become a pro very quickly, then I see that as a major, major competitive advantage in, you know, running your practice. And I've got clients that do this really well across all manner of different roles. I've got a client who's really good at taking young dentists and helping them become very skillful and very productive in their roles. I've got a different client who's, again, really good at taking dental assistants, basically untrained and unskilled, off the street and having them become really great dental assistants in a short space of time. Similarly with hygienist therapists, similarly with front desk people. So again, we want to be able to do that. And that means, you know, you're going to need to do the knowledge transfer, as I said, but you're going to want to engage in regular mentoring and training. And so making sure that that is systemized, making sure that it is planned, making sure that it is prioritized. Because one of the things I know is that when the practice gets busy, the first thing that gets sacrificed is training. And what happens then is, even if you've got someone who's really competent in the role, if you don't build the system in your practice, then what happens when that person leaves is you don't have the resources now to train the new person. And so if you've got great people in your practice, that's wonderful. Let's capture that knowledge. Let's capture that into a process. Let's understand what great looks like, use them as the exemplar, and let's decode what they do, how they do it, and build the resources so that when a new person comes in, we can train them to be as good as the person that you've currently got. So that's the thing about training. And then I guess the third key thing I wanted to talk about today was about replacing you and who do we hire in what sequence. Now, again, there's no one right way to do this. I think there's going to be a couple of ways that you can do it. But I guess one of the things that I would say is one of the first things I'd be thinking about is, how do I free up my clinical time? I want to just stop on this and linger on this point for a second, because one of the things I have noticed with the people that get stuck doing dentistry, you know, 9 to 5 and never getting out of that, is because they see time away from the dental chair as lost opportunity, lost productivity. And I'm going to say to you, maybe that's right, but perhaps another way of looking at it is taking time away from the chair allows you to build the resources and the team and the structures that will ultimately free you from needing to be at the chair. So I really want to encourage you to invest time in developing your team, developing the SOPs and processes for your practice, and do that really well. So again, please understand that time away from the chair is not lost opportunity if you use it well. If you go down and watch Netflix, yeah, then maybe it's lost opportunity. So if you're going to free up some clinical time, you have a choice to either hire an associate dentist or a dental hygienist or therapist. Again, there's some people that are very strident in their views about, I only have, you know, associate dentists, or I only hire hygienists or therapists. I'm really a bit agnostic about all of those things. I'm thinking about, what are the things that you like to do? What are the things you don't like to do? What are the things you want to offload? So if you were going to get a dental therapist, for example, you could be offloading, you know, the dental hygiene work, you know, scaling, cleaning teeth. You could be offloading kids' restorative treatment. You could be offloading some of the routine adult restorative treatment, provided the scope of practice was appropriate for the dental therapist. Equally, if you, you know, had an associate dentist, you could hand off more and more complex things as well. But again, you'll need to make that decision. But if you're busy now, the first thing I'd be saying is, let's think about handing off some of your clinical work, making sure that you, assuming you have enough work to go around, you know, handing off some clinical work to a clinician of some description. Now, once you've freed up a bit of clinical time, for argument's sake, you started with a, you know, a dental therapist, you might then go, well, it doesn't have to be an either or question forever. Maybe the next hire is going to be an associate dentist. So I don't really believe that you have to say, I'm only ever going to hire associate dentist or therapist forever and a day. It could be which one you hire first. So make your decision around that, and then understand that as time progresses, you may choose to hire a second clinician, and it doesn't have to be a carbon copy of the first. Now, once you've got your clinical team sorted, you may want to start thinking about hiring a treatment coordinator. A treatment coordinator is someone who can help you present treatment and have it accepted, basically sell treatment. And so once you've hired a treatment coordinator, it takes the pressure off some of the sales. It means that you're not relying on your associate dentist to be, you know, great case presenters, though good if they are, amazing if they are. But if you've got a treatment coordinator who can sell treatment on your behalf and on behalf of the other clinicians, then you've got a sales team in there now, which means you're going to have more treatment accepted, more treatment in the books, drives revenue, etc., etc. And when you're looking to back yourself out of the practice, one of the things we need to do is to continue to grow revenue. We want to make sure that you as the principal are not the key person. And the big fear is taking time out of the practice and losing that overall revenue. So we've got to make sure we replace that revenue and then some. And we do that by having your clinical team in place, but maybe even having a sales team or treatment coordination team in there to help you with that process as well. So again, really, really key. That drives revenue and it gives you peace of mind. Once you've got those people in place, maybe the next thing you want to start thinking about is, you know, creating a bit of freedom for yourself. Maybe it's about having a personal assistant or an executive assistant, and they would typically maybe manage your calendar, some general admin for you, email management, and maybe even some personal tasks. Maybe it's paying bills or things of that nature. If you have trust levels around that, maybe don't do the paying bills bit. But you know, you can have a personal assistant or an EA taking care of you. Maybe that means, you know, booking your holidays. Maybe it means organizing nights out, reservations, et cetera, et cetera. All those personal admin things, as well as some of the work things, you can have a PA for that. Now, do you need to have someone full-time? No, you can actually have a fractional PA. You can hire someone locally in Australia, or you could hire a virtual assistant. I use virtual assistants. I've been using virtual assistants for many, many years, and they're great. And you could certainly use an onshore person or an offshore person, either in the office or virtually, and that would be totally fine. And then, of course, if we want to get further up the ladder of replacement, then we want to start thinking about, who am I going to hire to help us even more? And that is going to be getting help around strategy and leadership. And in that case, you may want to recruit an operations manager or a general manager, someone who's going to be part of that leadership team with you, help you make decisions. And if you're operating multiple practices, you'll probably need one of those to sit across all the different locations. But if you've got one location, again, that person can be the driver. Now, I want to just draw a distinction here. A general manager and a practice manager may or may not be the same person. My experience with practice managers is most of them don't really do the people management part well. Most of them receptionist with a few extra duties. So I'm talking about someone who's highly skilled around leadership strategy, someone who's got the chops around that to do that. And that's usually not a traditional practice manager. Now, I'm not knocking traditional practice managers. They're great and they serve a really important role, but I'm talking someone at a higher level again. And it may be someone who is a practice manager who's grown and evolved and developed, but oftentimes it's not. So we want to replace people in that order. So it begins by freeing up your clinical time. Then we free up sales and get revenue consistency, making sure we're not relying on unproductive associates or unproductive therapists. We've got to keep that revenue driving and keep it moving forward. Then we're going to create a bit of freedom by hiring a personal assistant or an executive assistant to do calendar, email, personal tasks and so on. And then after that, we're going to start talking about having someone help you with strategy and leadership in a general manager kind of role or an operations kind of role, and that may or may not be the practice manager. It's really important to think about who your next hire is. We've got to identify when that or where you are in your business journey. What are the friction points that you're experiencing? What are the things that are causing you to lose sleep at the moment? And maybe we then need to start thinking about, well, who do I hire first? And what's my org chart look like now? What's my future org chart look like? And who's the next hire around that? So again, when we come to free up time, we've gone through those three big ideas. We've spoken about delegation and the three filters that we use when we delegate. We've spoken about the importance of training and mentoring, becoming a training institution. And yes, going to training courses, that's great, but building that internal capability is key. And then we spoke about replacing you so that you become further up the organizational chart. And we want to build the team up and push the work down. And that's where we start speaking about who do we replace you with sequentially over time. And so we went through that replacement structure there. So I hope you find that helpful. My goal for each of you is to have a practice and a life that you love. Now, I really believe that if you're going to love your practice and love your life, you need to be making enough money, but you've also got to have the time and the freedom to enjoy it. And the biggest trap that I see most dentists falling into is they make money, but they don't have freedom. And it's like golden handcuffs. And we want to maintain that income, but we want to break those handcuffs so you get to enjoy that freedom, you get to enjoy the fruits of your labor, and you get to create that balance in your life so you can focus on the things that are really, really important to you. So that's it from me today. I hope you found that really helpful and look forward to talking to you next episode. All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.